Hello and welcome to the call. I'd like to give you a little information about how the call will work and then we'll get started. I know some of you have already pushed the 6 button to mute background noises, but if you haven't done so, I'd appreciate it if you would please do so, so we can have a nice clear call for the recording and transcription. At the end, I will take a few questions, and at that time, I'll ask those who have questions to please push the 6 again so we can hear you. The format for the call is simply that I will interview our guest, Barbara Friesner, who will be the first guest in our series, Caring for Our Elderly Loved Ones. When we're finished the interview, I'll open the line for questions. So let's get started. For those of you who don't know me, I am Dotsie Bragle, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at nabbw.com, and also boomerwomenspeak.com, and both happen to be the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I'm passionate about educating and empowering boomer women, which happens to be my generation. Since launching boomerwomenspeak.com 5 years ago, I became the go-to person for people who are interested in learning more about boomer women. And I really have a mission of just embracing all women and providing them with the means to soar. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Dolans.com, so if you're interested in excellent financial information that will encourage you to live a more financially responsible midlife, we recommend that you visit their site at Dolans.com. And we're also sponsored by Elations, which is a daily drink supplement that offers relief from joint aches and pains, and it's an alternative to taking the big pills, and you can find them at elations.com. If you're not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join is typically $75, but if you're on the call and you're a guest of Barbara's, I'd like to invite you to join for $50, and you can email me at dots, that's D-O-T-S, at nabbw.com, and I'll send you the reduced link to join. This teleseminar is one of the many that are archived in our members-only area at nabbw.com. All of our past teleseminars are free for you when you join, and they are also transcribed, so if you don't like listening to them while working online, you can print them and read them at your convenience. Okay, let's get started by allowing me to introduce Barbara Friesner. She is the author of The Ultimate Caregiver Survival Guide, and she is the country's leading generational coach and expert on issues affecting seniors and their families. She started AgeWise Living as the result of over 25 years as the care manager for her grandmother and now her mother. She provides generational coaching and educational programs to support and educate families so they can resolve their elder care issues by choice and not by crisis. In addition to being the elder care expert for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, every month Barbara publishes her highly regarded newsletter, and she has also been published in national magazines and newspapers and featured on television and radio across the country. She is a professional speaker and most recently was the keynote speaker for the National Association of Geriatric Care Managers annual convention that was held in Orlando, Florida, and I think that was just last month.
Yep.
Yeah, and she's also an adjunct professor at Cornell University. She received her MBA from Boston University. So welcome to the call, Barbara.
Thank you, Dotsie. I'm thrilled to be here.
Good. I just wanted to know if you'd like to tell them just a little bit before we get started about your book, kind of slash workbook, and the CD that you have available through your site.
Well, the workbook is really terrific, if I do say so myself, which of course I do, because a lot of times you get a book about a subject and you read about it, but then you have to figure out how to actually do it. And what's so great about this book is that it is an actual workbook. So you don't just learn what to do. With the Ultimate Caregiver Survival Guide as a workbook, you really do it. It has examples and it has samples and forms to fill out and things like that, so that it just walks you step by step through the process. And so it really is so helpful for people to actually use it. And it's spiral bound, so it lays flat, and it just And then it also has a CD in the back of it of all of the forms, because there are also forms for things like taking your loved one to the doctors, and it has a doctor's appointment form and all kinds of stuff. So it's a really terrific book. And by the way, anybody on this call who buys the Ultimate Caregiver Survival Guide, I'm also going to give them for free the box set of three CDs of the AgeWise Living Expert Series. And that's three CDs, one with an elder law expert, one an interview with a personal financial planning expert, and one with a family relationship expert. And it's really terrific. It talks about, like, with elder law, for example, why an elder law attorney, when do you go, what do you have to bring with you, what do you get out of the meeting, what are the mistakes, you most common mistakes, how do you get your loved one to talk about it, all those kinds of things. So it's really a terrific set. And then if your aging loved one has dementia, then the Ultimate Caregiver Survival Guide workbook really is not appropriate, because someone with dementia really is past the reason and logic that we use in the workbook. So if your aging loved one has dementia, then I also have a CD called Is It Simple Forgetfulness or the Real Thing? And it's a great CD. It really takes people through from figuring out, first of all, even what is dementia, and you know, is that Alzheimer's, or, you know, what is it, and other causes of forgetfulness. And it really takes you through the process of helping a loved one with dementia. So that's called Is It Simple Forgetfulness or the Real Thing? And they can get that on my website as well, which is agewiseliving.com.
Okay. So I just wanted to say, actually, last year when we surveyed our members, we gave them, I want to say, like 25 topics and said, which are the most important to you at this point in time in your life, and what do you need more educational opportunities about? And we came up with 12 topics, and that's how we got our editorial calendar for this year. One of the 12, of course, was this whole issue of elder care, and for some reason I put it in this month. And wouldn't you know that I have a loved one who has been in the hospital for 3 weeks right now, who is in his fourth year of Alzheimer's. And so we've done lots of running back and forth to the hospital and trying to figure out what our next step is. And then in addition to that, my dad fell last week and hurt his knee, and he needs someone with him 24 hours. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is such perfect timing. And I have to tell you that I listened to Barbara's CD while driving around and back and forth last week about the simple forgetfulness. Is it simple forgetfulness or the real thing? And I have to tell you, it was most helpful. Some of it we have already lived through, and I wish I had already listened, you know, had listened to it prior to that. But some of it is exactly what we're facing right now. So it's just kind of interesting that this timing is as it is. Now, if there's anyone on the call who hasn't pushed the 6 button to mute background noises, I'd appreciate it if you do it now. We're all finished with introductions, et cetera, so we are going to just jump right in. So, Barbara, we've got quite a few things, actually 14, to get through in about, let's say like 40 minutes, and then we'll open up for some questions. So my first question is, not knowing, understanding, and or respecting the importance of emotions and generational experiences definitely has an effect in how we correspond with our elderly, whether they're our parents or an aunt or uncle or neighbor or just someone that we love. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And a lot of people really want to help their aging parents or other aging loved ones. And like maybe many baby boomers, they just dive right in and unfortunately don't always know how to approach a topic, so they crash into a wall of resistance. And so it's really important that when you begin to talk with your aging loved one, it's really important to know that this is a process. And if you follow the process, then there's really no reason why you can't be successful. But there are, as you say, there are 14 pitfalls that you definitely want to avoid, and one of them is not knowing, understanding, or respecting the importance of their emotion or their generational experiences. And most people think that because we come from the same family, we must think and feel the same way. And, you know, after all, these are our parents, they raised us, so we must all be on the same page. And unfortunately, that's just not true. And the fact is that generational perspectives and emotions matter a lot. And as baby boomers, our parents' generation is very different from ours in understanding and respecting how they view the world generationally and how they feel about it emotionally is really critical to your success. There are two of them. First, looking at the emotional issues and thinking about what are some of the emotional issues that seniors are facing. They're facing things like aging, illness. They're living longer, so they are getting where many might not have lived long enough to get sick, they are now getting sick, and in many cases they are getting more sick, and they're getting sicker for longer periods of time. They're also, and so there's, you know, illnesses are very emotional in dealing with that. Death of spouse, of a spouse, death of friends, fear of losing control and independence, that's a huge one. Fear of dependency or not having anyone to depend on, and just being angry and overwhelmed. And while the issues and decisions that they're going to have to make really are very practical in nature, where are they going to live? Are they going to be driving? What, you know, the kinds of decisions they have to make are very practical. For them, this is a very emotional time. So what might have been no big deal 10 years ago is a very big deal to them now. And with these major issues, when anyone, no matter what their age are, when anyone is emotional and overwhelmed, they tend to move slower and be more cautious, or they are more emotionally volatile. They either withdraw or quicker to flare up or even explode. And so, you know, looking at it from an emotional standpoint, you look at your mother, your father, your loved one, and you say to yourself, you know, this is someone who's always been very practical my whole life. Why is this a big deal? Well, it's a big deal because there are a lot of emotional things. And then the second part of it is the generational issue. And every generation's collective generational experience has a huge impact on our attitudes. And because our parents lived through the Great Depression, they're often called the Depression-era generation, and money, of course, is very important to them. But those who are in their mid to upper 80s, while they're commonly called the Depression era generation, their formative years were actually at the end of the Victorian era, which is why I call them Vicky D's for Victorian Depression era. And so they were, many of them were in their late teens and early 20s when the Depression hit, but they were formed by the standards of the Victorian era, and those standards most influence the issues that most of us are dealing with them today. For example, they're very private. That was a generation that didn't talk about personal things. You didn't talk about money. You didn't talk about health, not to professionals and certainly not to their children. And so if you're uncomfortable talking about with them about their money or their health or something, imagine how they feel, because as a generation, they just didn't do it. They're also, as a generation, very proud, very self-sufficient. This was a generation, many of them were first or second generation coming here to the United States. And so they made it on their own. You know, you went out there and you created what you built and created the American dream. But what that means is they may not ask for help. They may not admit they need it. And they may not be very gracious about accepting it. And it's also, let me just add one more thing. It's also a generation that has very strictly defined male and female roles. So the men were breadwinners. They were the professionals. They handled the money. Mm-hmm. The women were homemakers and mothers and took care of extended family members. And as a result, they expect their daughters to be care providers, but often turn to the sons for professional advice. And in most cases, they're more receptive to a man's opinions, especially a doctor's, and more comfortable with male professionals. So it's, you know, it's so in general, it may be easier to discuss health and taking over the finances with the mother, but not the house. And in general, it's easier to discuss moving with a man, but not the finances. So really keeping in mind their generational perspective and the emotional, where they're coming from emotionally has huge impact.
Well, you know, while you were speaking, I was just thinking of these past few weeks, and I have to say, when my dad fell the other day, the first thing I said was, all right, Dad, let's go to the ER. I mean, you know, you say the boomers jump in and they just want to fix and get it done. And he was like, now, wait a minute, honey. Let me just sit here and think about this for a minute. And he needed to collect his thoughts because he was thinking, oh, boy, you know, what did I do now? But my first thought is, okay, off to the emergency room. Let's see what's going on and get it taken care of.
Yep.
And that was not his first thought. That was not his first thought. And then the other thing that I think is interesting is that you say talk about them being self-sufficient. Boomers at midlife, I think, are learning that it's okay to ask for help. But I'll tell you, I don't know that this generation has ever really felt like it was okay. They have wanted to do it all for themselves, and they pretty much have. And so, you know, when they have to have somebody with them 24 hours, I know in my dad's case, he's just so disappointed in himself that he just can't quite do what he needs to do to be there by himself.
Yeah.
So it's so true. But there are a lot of generational differences that we need to take into consideration because our generation is kind of like the fixers and let's just get it done. And they're, you know, they kind of think things through and want to follow the procedures that they're used to. So that's really interesting, Barbara. What about when we think that our concern for them is reason enough for a change? Like we might see something they're going through, and we jump in and say, okay, you know, it's time for a change. What are we going to do? How do we address that?
Well, concern is good, and anticipating potential problems is great. But before you do anything, it's also important to ask yourself if your concern requires change. And if so, does it require change now? And if the answer to the question is yes, then please do proceed. But many times we're concerned, gee, you know, mom's getting older. Maybe she shouldn't live on her own anymore. She's fine. She's healthy. She's living independently. She's driving. She's fine. No problem. But because we're concerned, we think, well, we better move her into an assisted living now because, you know, that way I won't have to worry about her. And the fact is that, you know, it's like, wait a second, back up here for a minute because I, you know, does the concern require change? And if not, then rather than jumping in with both feet, it's better to start talking with your aging loved one about your concern for their future, for their need to prepare, but not the need for them to change now.
Mm-hmm.
So mom is fine, so she doesn't have to move, but just so now is a perfect time to talk to her and say, you know, and I know you're in great shape, mom, and I'm not suggesting any moves today, but you know, have you ever thought about where you'd want to live when the house gets to be too much for you? That
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I can certainly relate to this because one of the things we're going through right now is waiting lists. and we should have known better. I mean, you can't just get in a place immediately. So that's one of the reasons we need to talk about this before it's an issue. You have to get on a waiting list, and sometimes they're 3 months and sometimes they're 2-3 years. So talking about, I know, I think you used the term like taking care of things by choice and not by crisis. Is that
mm-hmm.
what you said?
Yep.
Yeah. And that, I think, is huge. And we're learning that right now because we're saying, oh, my gosh, you know, my dad is going to get better this time around, but what's going to happen when he doesn't or he won't? So we have to use this opportunity to start talking about this stuff. So
absolutely. And you're so right about waiting lists and things like that, because so often people do wait to call me as a generational coach. They wait to call me for my help until there is a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're absolutely right. You know, maybe the place that is the ideal place has a waiting list, and that's not going to be an option. Or now the money isn't there and it's not available. So really, it's important to be concerned and anticipating,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you're concerned about them for the future means that they have to change today.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, you know, sometimes they might have to move twice because you didn't plan ahead.
Yes.
You know, the ideal place isn't available, but another one is. And so anyway, okay, let's talk about the term parenting the parent.
That's one that makes me absolutely nuts, because mm-hmm. I hear people use it so much that, oh, now that my parents aren't in good shape, I'm having to parent my parent. And that makes me crazy. And the reason it makes me crazy is because if one of you is the parent, then by definition, the other one is the child.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that then it's very easy to start treating the other person like a child or even subconsciously talking to them as if they're children. Sort of the verbal pat on the head, which understandably anybody resents. Nobody likes being condescended to. And when you think in terms of parenting the parent, now come on, Mom, it's time for us to go. Come on. You know, she's already feeling very emotional. She's already feeling very stressed. And now you're going to talk to her like a parent. I mean, like a child.
Right.
So it just makes me nuts. So rather than approaching a conversation with your aging loved one as parenting the parent, it is better to approach it and think about it always as a collaboration. And the key to successful collaboration with your aging loved one is to create and maintain an adult-adult relationship. You're their kids, and, you know, that's fine. But in a situation like this, it's two adults because by the time you're a baby boomer, you are an adult, it is time to start having an adult-adult relationship. And it really changes the dynamic and makes it so much easier to work with them.
Mm-hmm. I like the collaboration piece. That's good because I know myself, I have friends who have used this term, you know, now I'm parenting my parents. And even though we may feel that way, it's probably not a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, and actually, I have to say that something just kind of on the side here that I believe is happening with baby boomers is we are getting these wake-up calls. And it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is going to happen to us one day. And I think that it's good for us to consider that and then consider how we would want to be treated if we were in that situation, because I think that can really help us help our parents or our loved ones. The other thing I think that it's doing is moving us to purchase, like, the long-term care insurance, because we're seeing how incredibly expensive it is to take care of a loved one, whether it's in a home or 24-hour care inside their home or putting them into a retirement community. I think that it's a huge awakening for us.
And I don't sell long-term care insurance. I don't have any connection to it. But I tell you, absolutely, it is such a it'll save your life later on because it is so expensive.
I know, and you know, it's actually something that my husband and I have purchased, and we are looking at our parents right now and saying, you know, they had the means to do this. Why didn't they do it? I just don't even think they knew about it. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't do it, but it certainly makes sense.
Well, for a lot of them, they didn't do it because either they didn't know about it because it really is something that's quite new.
It's relatively new.
Or in some cases, health-wise, by the time they did find out about it, in many cases, their health doesn't allow them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it doesn't allow them to do it. It's just exorbitantly expensive. Which is why I tell baby boomers all the time, look into it, really consider it. And people say, well, I'm really rich, so I don't need to do it. And it's like, wish I were in that position. But my feeling is that who knows what your situation will be in 20 years. Why not have the long-term care insurance and leave the money that you have to your kids, you know? So I really recommend it. So.
Yeah, and, you know, I think something that's really sad about this generation, they were so hardworking for their money and for their pensions. And they had these pensions, and they thought that they were going to be leaving these things to their children or living comfortably and hopefully leaving something to their children. And what's happened is because they're living longer, their pensions are being wiped out just to take care of themselves.
And
it's so unfortunate.
More expensive.
Yes, it's unfortunate. Okay, let's talk about addressing the symptoms rather than the cause.
Yeah, and we see this in medicine all the time where your leg hurts, so they drug or cut off the leg, and then your arm hurts, so they drug or cut off your arm. And eventually, you know, someone says, well, maybe we should look at what the root cause is, and they find out that they were addressing the symptoms rather than the root cause. And the same thing often happens when family members try to get involved with their aging loved one, especially when they're trying to help from a distance and they're not around to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
So they hear a symptom. For example, your father has a couple of fender benders, and you hear that and that's all you know. So the first thing is take away the car. But before you do, ask if the problem is the driving or is there a root cause? Could there be another problem? For example, is he having problem with his eyes? Is he having problems with his ability to turn his head and that kind of thing? So ultimately, you might have to take away the car. That is possible. But just simply taking it away before you look at the root cause of the problem and saying, wait a second, there's really something more here to it. In other words, before doing anything, investigate and analyze all the symptoms until you find the root cause and then address that. For example, possibly buying your dad glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you spend a lot of time and emotional capital and really end up no better off or even in some cases worse off than where you started. So it's really important, and some ways of doing that is talk to your siblings, because they may tell you one thing and they tell the sibling another thing and somebody else another thing, and it's not until you really put it all together and you say, wait a second, now I'm seeing a clearer picture of really a different problem than what we thought it was.
Okay. You also talk about the differences in men and women, and you mentioned it a little in the generational experiences, but how important it is for us to realize that men and women really are different, especially when we're trying to help them solve issues.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I mean, but it's true. They really are, especially when it comes to communication styles, and not just with the elderly. Men and women of all ages communicate differently. Women communicate more socially, and we tend to do more chit-chatting before, during, and after the basic information,
mm-hmm.
whereas men tend to be more direct. They just want to get to the point, just the facts, ma'am. And so men talking with men and women talking with women is generally easier because they have the same communication style. Trouble sometimes comes when sons need to talk to their mothers or daughters need to talk with their fathers, because the son is very to the point, and he's talking to mother, so he gets right to the point, and she needs more of the chit-chatting. Daughters do more of the chit-chatting. They're talking to their father, and he's going nuts because it's like, just get to the point. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't talk. What I am saying is that you really need to think about who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking to your mom, daughter to mother is one thing, son to father is another. But if a son is talking to the mother, daughter talking to the father, you need to adapt your communication style to them, because you're the one who's trying to improve the communication. So you really need to think, if you're a daughter and you're talking to your father, you need to get to the facts and get to the point a lot more clearly and a lot more quickly. With the son, needs to do more of the chit-chatting.
Okay, good. Very good. Good point. Okay. Let's see. We tend to think that we can make anybody want to change, especially when we see something from the outside. Can you address that a little bit? You know, just when we think we can make anybody want to change.
Yeah, and this is a really huge pitfall, because no one can make anyone want to change. You can't do it with your kids. You can't do it with your spouse. And with them, you have more leverage. So if you're really trying to make your aging loved one do something, it's not surprising you'll get the same result. You'll get a no. The fact is, what you think someone should do doesn't really matter. What only matters is that the person making the change wants to make the change. So just because I think you ought to do something doesn't mean you're going to do it until you figure out for yourself why that's something that you want to do.
So how do you address that? Like, if you see something that needs to be changed, like, you know what, Dad really shouldn't be driving anymore. How do you get around to that conversation and hopefully move in a safe direction?
Well, you ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
You ask the kind of questions that will help them discover their reason for doing something. Mm-hmm. And this is a really huge thing, and it's something that I do a lot of in my book, but I'm going to try to describe it. Because what is important as you're asking the questions, for example, you mentioned the driving.
Okay.
Dad needs to not be driving. Ask him the kinds of questions that will get him to realize that, and I'm just using these as examples. Perhaps if he is somebody who feels very strongly about his image and his standing in the community, say, Dad, you know, if something happened and you had an accident, imagine what the neighbors would, you know, what do you think the neighbors would say?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I know you're really concerned about Mom, and I love that you drive Mom around and take her on her all of her errands, and I know she really appreciates it. But if you had an accident, Dad, and something happened to Mom, how would you feel for the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm. Oof, wow. And what about also, like, I know one of the ways we've talked to my dad about certain things is when he tells us that, like, one of his siblings or somebody from his generation, friend, whatever, has something going on with them. Like, just say one of his friends just sold their last car. Oh, gosh, he sold his car, so he's not driving anymore. How are you doing with driving these days? You know, that kind of thing. Kind of taking a little clue from what's going on with other people in their generation. We've done that with my dad a little bit.
And that's a really good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Think in terms of what kind of an answer you're hoping to get. So rather than ask, you know, if it's just a general conversation asking about what do you think about that or how do you think you're doing, just be prepared for him to say, I'm fine. And leave it at that.
Right.
You know, rather than asking that, say, you know, what is he doing, this friend? What is this friend doing to get around? What kind of resources has he come up with? How is he getting to the doctor? Those kinds of questions.
Right.
So that he can start thinking in terms of there is a life after the car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you know they've got to be thinking about this stuff themselves. Okay, I know a pitfall is when we don't ask for input from our aging loved ones, or, you know, we don't even listen when their input is offered. What can we do about that?
Well, sometimes we get so caught up in wanting to help that we don't think to ask them what they want, or even if they have any good ideas about what a good solution would be. And you know, your aging loved one, so long as they're of sound mind, they're the ultimate decision maker, and
mm-hmm.
the person will determine if there's going to be success or failure. So rather than just announce the solution, to include them in the process, emphasize the desire to help and not take over control. Otherwise, you're going to be the one who gets excluded. Ask them the kinds of questions that we were just talking about. What are some of the other options for you to get to the senior center? What are some of the other options for you to get to the doctor if you can't drive? And let them get into, you know, let them offer their input.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times what we do, because we are so gung-ho and really caring, is we sort of present a solution.
I can totally see that. I've seen that happen just these past couple weeks while we've been in this mix with caring for our loved ones. But we, you know, we're just like, oh, gosh, this is what we need to do. Okay. And then, you know, we go to them, okay, this is what's going to happen. And it's just like, you know, a confused look, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of times they know that's what's going to happen because
mm-hmm.
they know.
Mm-hmm.
But better to say, okay, where do we go from here, Dad? You know, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's you're not going to be able to drive for at least a few months because of this. You're just not going to be able to. So, what have you thought about this? What are some of the options? How can we help you?
Right. I love that. Where do we go from here, Dad? I think that's a good one. That's good. Okay. What about getting sucked into old behaviors and I can kind of relate to this just because there are five kids. My dad has five children, and he certainly looks to different ones of us for different things. And I think a lot of it just has to do with, you know, who we were as kids and mm-hmm. who we've been as adults. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and this is a big one. If we remember before I mentioned about an adult-adult relationship, a collaboration between adults.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to think of us as adults, we actually have to behave as adults. And years ago, I used to think, now I was a big shot. I was a corporate executive, and I had a really impressive job, if I do say so myself. I was a big shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, and I'd be, you know, when I walked into rooms and I said things, people listened to me. I would go to my parents' house, and I mean, to this day, I think they had a magic threshold. Because whenever I crossed that threshold to their house, I would revert back to my childhood. And my parents knew all the buttons to push, and I don't think they were pushing them on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But they would say something, and it never failed to get a reaction from me. And it was the reaction that I had since I was a kid. And people who act like children are treated like children. And so it's really important to think in terms of not getting sucked into old behaviors. So to successfully talk with your parents, it's really important to identify your buttons. What is it that mom or dad will say that always gets a rise out of you? And then to really, you know, to think about that ahead of time. And then when it happens, stay really focused. And when it happens, in your mind, instead of letting the emotion, as you start feeling the emotion rise, say to yourself, wait a second, there was one of my buttons, and I'm not going to react to it. Oh, this is fun. You know, whatever it is, you need to say to yourself to not react to it, so that you can stay focused on what you're trying to accomplish and why. And you really have to make a conscious decision to modify your own behavior to achieve your goals.
Mm-hmm. And I would have to say, I remember a time when my mom was dying, and she, I was always very frank and honest with my mother. I never beat around any bushes or anything like that. And so as a result, she was the same with me. And so I felt like she was harder on me when she was dying. And I remember one day, and I still feel guilty for it, just kind of standing up for myself and saying, Mom, you know, why am I the one you take this stuff out on? And, you know, that type of thing. It was, oh, God, I never should have done it. She was so sick. But it was just this relationship that we had for years. Like, I mean...
And she was doing it because she knew you would love her no matter what. You were the person she could do that with. So you need to forgive yourself on that.
I should forgive myself. But anyway, it is that old behavior thing.
And it is that old behavior thing. And it's also something that you said earlier, and that is that when you have siblings, everybody has the role that they played since childhood. This is the smart one. This is the funny one. This is the troublemaker. This is the angel. This is the devil. Whatever it is. And that's really, you know, it's one of those things that also can create problems between siblings. And
mm-hmm.
so it's so important for siblings to work together on this and not let, you know, not let, if you're all working together toward a common goal and they need to turn to your brother from a generational standpoint or for financial information or to somebody else, if you're all working together, then you can, you know, you can sort of accept that and say, you know what, if it gets the job done, I'm not going to react to it.
Right. I think we have to look at what, you know, what we're going after here, I guess, you know, what the purpose is. Okay, You mentioned a couple things that are pitfalls, like thinking once is enough, and then you also talk about not being flexible. Can you kind of, we're running out of time, so can you kind of tie those two together at all?
Okay, well, not being, thinking once is enough, for example, thinking you can close the sale in one conversation, and that's why I talk so much about how important it is for you to start early,
mm-hmm.
because you can't necessarily close the sale in one conversation. Remember I said earlier, they're very emotional. This is a very emotional time for them. And to go in and talk about major life issues and major changes in their life, not driving, moving, giving up one thing or another, is a very emotional thing. So really it's important to not think that you can go in, I've got 15 minutes, I've got a weekend, you fly in, you have this much to cover, and thinking that you're going to close it all in one conversation because that's how much time you have. The fact is that it's really important to slow down and remember that as difficult as this may be for you, this is far more difficult for them. And again, that's why it's so important to start early and also to remember that it's a process. And the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Right.
And so that's really important. Also, not being flexible, thinking that there is only one solution. This goes back to talking about not asking for your parents' input and not asking for other people's input. You know, oftentimes we have a solution that worked for our friend Jane, and so if it works for her, that works for me. That's fine. You know, mom should move into an assisted living. That sounds like a good thing. And really not thinking in terms of other solutions that may really be good. Their solution, your parents' solution, they may have come up with a really terrific solution. It's just not the one you thought of. So it's really important not to fall in love with your solutions, but to really be open-minded about it. And also thinking that the solution has to be all or nothing. A lot of times you get a lot further if, again, starting earlier, you're able to do a little bit at a time. So it's not you have to move into an assisted living or you know, that's the only solution. Maybe they can have in-home care for a few hours every day, or maybe there are steps that you can take in between, give up the house and move into a senior building or an independent living building or something like that. So really not being flexible and thinking that there are optional other solutions, other people can have good solutions, thinking it has to be all or nothing, and also thinking that solutions are etched in stone. What's really important for you and what's really important for your loved one is to realize this solution is only for today,
mm-hmm.
and it's only for as long as it works.
Mm-hmm.
And when it stops working, and I recommend that you say, let's revisit this in a month. Let's revisit this every month, because that way you can revisit it and say, oh, worked, great. Well, let's talk about it next month, and there's no surprise about revisiting it, and to say it's not working anymore, so now we have to take a look at some changes.
And that's so good, because we're in a situation where we're having to make decisions now. And we really, you know, I've heard you talk before. I've read all your articles that you put on the site, and I just think, oh, you know, in some ways we're prepared, but in a few others we just aren't prepared. But let's see. I have, like, quarter of. So you have, like, four pitfalls that you haven't touched on, which we can do. But let's just see if anybody has a question right now, so we can make sure we get a couple questions in. If anybody has a question for Barbara, you'd have to push the 6 button so we can hear your question. And sometimes it takes people a couple seconds to get up the courage to ask a question. So I'm just going to say, if you would like to ask a question, please push the 6 button and go ahead now. Okay, does somebody want to ask a question?
Hi, this is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
In California.
Hello, Lynn in California.
Hi, Barbara, I love what you've been saying, especially about the adult-adult relationship.
Thank you.
And I have something to offer people who are in the caregiving situation, and that is the process of journaling, because journaling relieves stress. And I have a system for doing it. I'm happy to share with people. They can go to my website, www.writeradvice.com. www.writeradvice.com, or they can just email me, LGOD67334@comcast.net, and that email is also on the website. I'll be happy to send information about it. It's a wonderful process.
Okay, Lynn, thanks for that. And if somebody didn't get that information, they can email me and I can send that. Why don't you send me the information, Lynn, and then if I hear from anybody, I can forward it to them in case they weren't able to catch everything. Yes, and you know what? That's a good point. Journaling, and one of the things we haven't gotten to yet is not taking care of ourselves as one of the pitfalls. So we will get to that. But does anybody else have a question before or a comment before we mention the last few pitfalls? If so, press the 6 button.
I have a comment.
Sure.
My name is Lori LeBaney, and I'm from Minnesota, and I also speak on aging. And one of the things that I ran across just recently while speaking was an older gentleman sitting in the crowd, and he kept bringing up the word pride. He says, and his poor daughter was sitting right next to him. And he said, no, kids don't understand. We're proud people. And if you can keep in mind our pride, it'll make it much easier. And so I just kind of came up with a little synopsis regarding pride, and that is preserve, respect, independence, dignity every day. And if you can keep that in mind when dealing with your parents, I think it'll just make it so much easier because it was so important. And I mean, I've gone through it with my own, and those days it's tough. You know, you just want to check it off your list of things to do because it's easier for us to look at it like that, but it's not about that.
Okay.
Down.
And feel free to email that to me, too, if you want, in case anybody didn't get that. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Let's make sure everybody has the six button pushed so we can have a clear background. And let's talk about, Barbara, not researching the alternatives before presenting. Tell us a little bit about what a pitfall that is.
Well, this goes back, for example, using the example when we talked about taking away the car. And if you don't look at alternatives to what to do if you take away the car, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. That may, in many cases, that's the right thing to do. But before you do it, you need to look at the alternatives because you don't want to leave them just stranded. You don't want to do that for a lot of reasons. One, because they need to get out for groceries and, you know, to do all the doctor's appointments and things like that. They need to have socialization, so many times they use the car to drive to the senior center. But it's important to think in terms of how can we still have them have the life they have, but just not do it, but give them alternatives. Maybe you do Meals on Wheels instead of them having to go out for the groceries, or you have things delivered online. Maybe the senior center. Most senior centers have a bus that will pick them up. Maybe they can carpool. But really looking at alternatives, maybe you can get a taxi and have vouchers for the cab. You can get someone to drive and everybody shares in on the gas. But really looking at alternatives before you just pull a pin or a leg out of the stool, you need to know what you're going to prop it up with as an alternative.
Okay, very good. Actually, I write for a couple magazines for baby boomers, and I just did one on, you know, some of the solutions before you take away the keys and what happens when you do take away the keys. So I mentioned several of those things that you mentioned. So, okay, how about one of the pitfalls is not enlisting or accepting help?
Yeah, a lot of times siblings oftentimes get so invested in being the one taking care of mom or dad that they don't think in terms of getting help from siblings, or they may not have a sibling to help take care of it, so they think they have to be the only one, or in some cases their siblings just don't do it quote-unquote right. I have a sister who just does things more slowly than I do them. And I'm a real type A personality, and she's way more laid back, and she's going to live a whole lot longer than I do. But it makes me nuts because there would be things that she would be helping me with my mother. We'd be working together, and she'd take forever to do something, and it just made me crazy. And eventually I took everything back. And so what is important is to enlist the help of other people, but to think in terms of what kind of help you give them. If I was having my sister do something that needed to be done right away, it made me crazy. Instead, I gave her, because I was the primary caregiver, I asked her to buy clothes for mommy. So whenever she got the clothes, we're fine. It didn't matter. But thinking in terms of enlisting help, and also thinking in terms of, remember I mentioned earlier about how different, you know, the son and mother and daughter and father and things like that, sometimes they are going to hear something better from a son versus a daughter. And so it's important to think in terms of who are they going to hear the information from best? Who cares if they get the financial information from your son, from your brother? If they accept it, even if you have to call them and say, look, just tell them this.
Right.
If they take it from him, then it's fine. That's all you're really trying to accomplish anyway. And also to look outside and to look at outside options, you know, outside of the family.
Yes, great point. Because sometimes there are friends of the family who are interested and willing and really capable and want to help do a 3-hour shift or, you know, drive someone somewhere or something like that. So I'm hoping that as boomer women we're getting better at asking for help, and we realize we don't have to be the superwoman who does it all. So, okay, let's see. Does anybody have any questions at this point? We have just a few more minutes. If you have a question or a comment, you can push the 6 button, and we'll be able to hear you. Okay, looks like we're doing a good job here, Barb. Let's go to not knowing when to hold them, when to fold them, and when to walk away.
And you know, basic reality is that if your parents are of sound mind, there is no dementia, there's no, you know, there's no mental illness or any form of dementia or anything like that, they really have the right to do what they want to do. And so it's important to remember that you're there to help them want to do what is in their best interest. But if they don't want to do something, they really don't have to. So sometimes, and again, I say start early, because then it's better to say, you know what, it's not going to work today, so I'm better to fold my cards and walk away, and we can start again tomorrow, rather than this getting into a head-on-head combat, which is only going to create problems in the long run. It's better to say, you know what, it's time. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to take a walk around the block. I'll come back tomorrow. I'll come back next week or whatever. So really knowing when you're hitting a brick wall to know, you know what, this is the time for us to put it down and pick it up later on.
Okay, now let me ask, though, because I'm sure there often comes a time when you see the writing on the wall and you know it's time to make a change, whether it's to downsize, you know, maybe both parents are still living, one is becoming, you know, sicker or whatever the case may be, and you hate to see the other one left in the home alone, so let's downsize while they're both still with us. And anyway, you try to make your point, but they just don't listen. We can't really do anything about that, but it's sad because we're the ones who are usually affected by it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, I do. But there are ways that you can do it, and that's some of the things that we were talking about here, some of the things that and that I go through in great detail in my book, because that's the thing. It's when you stand there and it's like you know that there's going to be a time, whether it's this year or 5 years from now, you know that this is something that they need to look at. And so it's really important to approach it in a way that gets them to want to do it. One of the things that I talk about is having them fill out a form that I call the what do I want for the third half of my life.
Oh, I've seen that on your site, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And for them to with them fill it out, and it's just a fun form. You fill it out and you do one and they do one. They're not so easy to do, and we don't have enough time for me to get into much detail about it, but you talk about what are some of the things that you want in the future, and maybe they'll say that I want to, you know, maybe they say I want to be safe, or that I want to live in my own home, or that I've always wanted to sing great opera, or I always wanted to get my high school degree or my college degree. And as you're looking at all of those things with them, then you can start making some together, start thinking in terms of how could you make that happen? This is not a to-do list. So just because they want to sing great opera and have no voice doesn't mean they're going to sing great opera. But to think in terms of just getting these things down and saying, well, you know, Mom, there's a place up near a college that has that when you live in this particular senior complex, you actually can go to college for free, and you can go to all of their concerts and all of their classes. So, you know, that might be something to take a look at. I wonder if there are other places. And suddenly it opens the world to them. So this is a way, again, we talked about not asking what they think and not listening to them. This is a great way to get them to want to do it, to see that there is a reason for change, that there's that this is people change, people willingly change when they get something that they don't already have, or they get to keep something that they want. They're willing to make changes if they get to get something that they want or keep something they want. And so to be able to look at them, to have them look at it and say, here's a way for you to get something you want And all it requires is that you move. And I'm way oversimplifying.
Right, I understand. Well, you know, and it's interesting that we have to make them realize sometimes that change is good, because if you look at a person who's staying at home with one caregiver, really kind of cut off from the world, who doesn't want to move, and then they're a people person, and if you can just kind of get them to see, you know, all of the beauty that will be around them when they move into a place with other people who are doing the same things they're doing or not doing some of the things they used to do and can do new things together, it's a good change. So somehow we have to be clear in making that point that, you know, just because it's a change doesn't mean that, you know.
But what we don't want to do is give them all the reasons why we think it's a good thing.
What we
want to do is help them see all the, come up with their own reasons why it's a good thing. And that's the process that I'm talking about. Because they have to, then you may come to the end, at the end you may come to the same conclusion. Ideally you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that just you telling them all the great things about it, they're not going to feel it and make a change until it's their reason for wanting to change.
Right. And I can understand that. I mean, we should be able to understand that with changes that we have to make or need to make. Nobody's telling us what to do. You know, we have to come to the conclusion on our own, and it's the same with them. Okay, how about the last pitfall is when we just don't take care of ourselves?
And that's a huge one, especially women. We are so good, so wonderful at taking care of other people. We take care of our kids, we take care of our parents, we take care of our spouses, we take care of our bosses, we take care of our friends. We always put ourselves last, or just about everybody always puts themselves last. But the important thing to remember is if you don't take care of yourself, you won't be able to take care of anyone else. And, so we really owe it to ourselves and to everyone else in our lives to take care of ourselves, so that we are there not only for ourselves, but for them as well. So that's a huge one.
Okay. Barbara, you've done a great job. And tell us your website again.
It's www.agewiseliving.com. And let me say that all the information that we've been talking about in a lot more detail is in my book, The Ultimate Caregiver Survival Guide. And they get that through the shop page on my website, agewiseliving.com.
Okay, and then you also have some of those great forms on your site, which tell a little bit more about what's on your site. In addition to your products, what else? What other information do you have?
A lot of great stuff. I do a monthly newsletter. It's free, so go to the site and sign up for it. And you also, while you're on the site, you can look. There's 5 years' worth of old newsletters on there, so all the archived newsletters. So a lot of information is on there. So you can look at all of that, sign up for my newsletter while you're there. Also, I do a monthly teleseminar. The next one is this Wednesday night, and it's free. And the archived ones are on my website, and very shortly you're going to be able to also download them as podcasts. But in the meantime, you can listen to them on my website. So I think there's a year and a half worth of teleseminars there. Plus a lot of resources and a lot of information. So it's a really good site. I'm very proud of it because I feel very strongly about having a place that when someone is really stressed out as a caregiver, the last thing they need is for somebody to, you know, tease them that you could have this information and, you know, and then they can't find it.
Right.
So all of that is there for anybody who goes to it.
Okay, and also, as you know, Barbara is one of the experts with the association. So if you go to nabbw.com, you'll on the homepage, you'll look on the left-hand side and you'll see our experts, and Barbara is our elder care expert. If you click on that link, you'll see her bio, and you'll also see her article that she has up for this month. But beneath that, you'll see tons of other articles that are helpful if you're in an elder care situation. Does anybody have a question? We're like 4:02, but if there's one last question, we would take that, and then we can close the call. If you have a question, you need to push the 6 button, and Barbara can answer that for you. Okay, I think we have done a good job here, so thank you so much, Barbara, and I'll look forward to corresponding with you online.
You bet. Thank you, Doug.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.